Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1159. Biopsyop Apocalypse Now, Part 19. An Ounce of Prevention, Part 4. This is being recorded on October 29th of the year 2020. Well, it is 2 days from Halloween, so trick or treat. I don't think there are a lot of treats on the horizon, but an awful lot of tricks may very well be making themselves manifest. I have been focusing on various aspects of the COVID-19 phenomenon, including the larger picture of the full court press against China. And there is an awful lot going on. I can't encourage listeners to the program and readers of the articles on this website to subscribe to the comments that are being crafted and very skillfully so by Tara Fractal, our contributing editor. There is a great deal going on, and who knows what is going to happen on November 3rd. And there is an excellent possibility of violence. The Boogaloo Boys have been infiltrating so-called progressive protesters and maybe creating false flag violent episodes, which in turn will mobilize various militias, organizations like the Oath Keepers to respond. Who knows? We will see. But I am focusing on the pandemic and related events because I think this is it. This is the ball game. I think we are entering into the apotheosis of our entire civilization. I couldn't be more pessimistic, and I think basically this is the end of our civilization as we have come to understand it. Adolf Hitler, when expounding on the Third Reich and what it was, said very tellingly, I believe, those who see, and I'm paraphrasing slightly, those who see in National Socialism only a political movement have missed the point. It is more. It is much more. It is more even than a religion. It is the will to create man anew. And updating that to the contemporary rhetorical lexicon, I think that our civilization is in the process of being remade, and in a very, very, very sinister fashion. And so I am focusing on that, the line of exploration, the line of inquiry, the path of inquiry that I have been developing will lead us in our next program, which is going to be For the Record program number 1160, An Ounce of Prevention, Part 5, to detail a conspiracy theory. That's right, folks. I am going to be talking about a conspiracy theory that I think is not only probably valid, but will signal the end. And I mean the end. It will be the realization of Hitler's stated goal, and the Underground Reich will realize their goal as well. But that, with that teaser, that sort of coming attractions, or whatever you would like to term that, we will proceed into this program. This really is an appropriate run-up to Halloween, because we are going to be looking at monstrosities and horrors galore. We have been looking at a commission that has been initiated by The Lancet. That's L-A-N-C-E-T, a very prestigious British Medical Journal. It is going to be headed, the scientific part, by Peter Daszak, D-A-S-Z-A-K. He has been one of the most prominent names in connection with COVID-19. He had an op-ed column in the New York Times earlier this year talking about the pandemic, saying, this is it. This is disease X that we have been waiting for. And interestingly enough, the larger COVID-19 commission is going to be headed by Jeffrey Sachs, an individual who has no economic or no scientific or medical credentials that I am aware of. He is an economist, is not only a member of the Sanders Institute and advising both Bernie Sanders and AOC on matters economic. Most tellingly, he was the head of the Harvard Institute of International Development, partly funded by the U.S. government, which basically advised Boris Yeltsin and in so doing basically drove Russia back to the Stone Age economically. We'll talk more about him in a minute. We have been focusing in the big way and will continue to focus in part in this program on an article from About Magazine by Alexis Baden Mayer called Peter, Show Me the Money Daszak Pulls in Big Bucks Through EcoHealth Alliance for Risky Virus Research. And I'm going to reread and discuss some portions of this article because I think it is extremely important. And in our next program, we are going to revisit the gene drive technology, which is being funded in part by DARPA and also Bill and Melinda Gates. And I think that the potential of gene drive technology it has, I believe, the potential to realize Hitler's goal. And I think it is worth ruminating about in connection with the creation of epidemics and pandemics, and then perhaps introducing genetic material via vaccines, which would do to the human race what Adolf Hitler sought to do. Peter Daszak's EcoHealth Alliance is an organization. Well, I'm going to reread the first few paragraphs because it basically sums up what that organization is all about. We have looked at that in a big way in connection with one of their projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development, which has funded for CIA in the past. That project, which involved the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and also elements here in the U.S., such as Dr. Ralph Barrich of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. It was also funded by the National Institutes of Health, which have funded for CIA and Pentagon in the past. I think for our purposes, in terms of conceptualization, the Wuhan Institute of Virology, in my opinion, could be thought of as the Oswald Institute of Virology. I believe it has been set up through covert operations to basically be the patsy or the fall, not the fall guy, but the fall laboratory for the pandemic. Daszak, the aforementioned Ralph Barrich, have worked with people in the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and it remains to be seen what Daszak and company come up with as a finding. In that, Daszak has been a very high-profile advocate of gain-of-function research in the past, and as we will see, his organization is deeply involved with various U.S. national security agencies and the Pentagon in particular. My guess would be the most probable finding will be that, yep, the virus evolved naturally. I would bet a vast sum of money, and I'm not a gambler, and I don't have a vast sum of money that they will not save. It looks like this virus was manipulated in a lab controlled by the U.S. They may say that, yep, it looks like the virus escaped from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. My guess is they will say natural evolution is the, that would be my bet, but we will see. What I find so important and frankly frightening about the EcoHealth Alliance is that it looks very much like whatever the intent of Peter Daszak and many of the other people who are earning themselves a pretty good living with the grant money that they are getting, it looks very much like EcoHealth Alliance is in fact an organization that fronts for biological warfare research, although they are ostensibly and perhaps in the good, in the sincere intent of Daszak and others in the organization, it looks like that organization is in fact very much like the Unit 731. That was the deadly Japanese biological warfare research institution in World War II, the results of which were incorporated into the U.S. biological warfare research program at the end of World War II. It was officially titled the Epidemic Prevention and Water Purification Unit of the Guangdong Army. And I asked the question whether epidemic prevention may actually mask epidemic creation. From this article, again, a very, very important article, as important, in my opinion, as the Whitney Webb article from the Last American Vagabond blog that we have used so many times and that we will revisit in the future. People show me the money. Daszak pulls in big bucks to EcoHealth Alliance for risky virus research. It begins, Peter Daszak, president of EcoHealth Alliance, is a top scientific collaborator, grant writer, and spokesperson for virus hunters and gain-of-function dual-use researchers in labs, both military and civilian. Daszak works with dozens of high-containment laboratories around the world that collect pathogens and use genetic engineering and synthetic biology to make them more infectious, contagious, lethal, or drug-resistant. These include labs controlled by the U.S. Department of Defense in countries in the former Soviet Union, the Middle East, Southeast Asia, and Africa. Many of these labs are staffed by former biological weapons scientists. Before the Biological Weapons Convention was ratified, this research was called what it is, biological weapons research. Now, it's euphemistically called gain-of-function or dual-use research. Gain-of-function research to alter coronaviruses for the infection of humans goes back to 1999 or earlier, years before the first novel coronavirus outbreak. On behalf of the U.S. government, often the military, Daszak scours the globe for animal pathogens and brings them back to the lab to be cataloged, investigated, and manipulated. Again, bear in mind the advisory I have given so many times that the distinction between, quote, offensive, unquote, and, quote, defensive, unquote, biological warfare research is completely academic. When you are investigating how we beasties sicken or kill plants, animals, or humans, it is the same research, whatever you call it. Also, bear in mind that the military is not in the business of maintaining public health. The military is in the business of war fighting, and war fighting is about killing people and either destroying or confiscating property. If we were going to fight a war, I would trust the military. I don't trust them to maintain public health. I want to reread and highlight some key aspects of this article. Once again, returning to the Alexis Bodenmayer article, Daszak and others justify their research this way. If or when an outbreak of the new virus occurs, they can compare it to the ones in their labs and maybe glean how the novel virus emerged. A recent Wired magazine article quoting Bezac described how a virus collected in 2012 was found to be a 96% match to SARS-CoV-2 in 2020. And he was quoted, "The group has found about 500 bat-borne viruses in China over the last 16 years, but only flagged those that most resembled SARS to the authorities. A lack of funding meant they couldn't further investigate the virus strain, now known to be 96% genetically similar to the virus that causes COVID-19. Interesting though that story is, it fails to explain how SARS-CoV-2 evolved. Some scientists say it would take 50 years for that virus, RAPG-13, to turn into SARS-CoV-2. As Alexis Bodden-Mayer points out, the concept that they couldn't further investigate the virus because of lack of funding, just it's the classic dog that won't hunt. EcoHealth Alliance had $100.9 million in funding and has had other grants on top of that. So a lack of funding certainly is not a credible reason for not pursuing that. Another aspect of the article is worth highlighting via repeating. And again, this article exemplifies why I strongly encourage listeners to the program to read the written descriptions for the broadcasts. They will be available. The written descriptions for this series will be available presently. Once again, returning to the article. Bezac's research might be more hype and public relations than science, but the Department of Homeland Security's National Biosurveillance Integration Center, or NBIC, has chosen to rely on it. NBIC gave Bezac's EcoHealth Alliance a $2.2 million contract running from 2016 to 2019 to create a ground truth network of subject matter experts, unquote, who could provide, quote, contextual information pertaining to biological events. And the Department of Homeland Security is just one of many national security-related agencies, including the Pentagon, that are networked with EcoHealth Alliance. The article points out that the EcoHealth Alliance has missed the boat rather badly on a number of things, as has Peter Bezac. Whether this is simply bad research or deliberate deception is a matter of it's academic. The fact of the matter is the work is shoddy. One of those was on the attribution of bushmeat as a possible threat for importing Ebola into the U.S. From 2011 to 2014, EcoHealth Alliance had a $164,480 purchase order contract from the Centers for Disease Control in Pittsburgh for, quote, bushmeat, unquote. No more information than that is available on that contract, but the money likely funded the paper Bezac and his colleagues published in 2012. The 2012 paper, Zoonotic Viruses Associated with Illegally Imported Wildlife Products, unquote, was used in August 2014 at the height of the West African Ebola pandemic as the basis for a Newsweek article titled, Smuggled Bushmeat is Ebola's Backdoor to America. Parenthetically, the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute for Infectious Diseases was closed down by the CDC in early August of 2019. One of the things they were doing was researching remdesivir, originally developed as an antiviral to cure Ebola. It has now been repurposed into a broad spectrum antiviral, and it has a minimal, although recommended, application for SARS-CoV-2. Gilead Sciences, and the maker of remdesivir, has profound connections to the national security establishment. It is not clear what select agents, unquote, were being experimented on at the U.S. AMRIID, but it would be interesting to know. Certainly, they were testing remdesivir on Ebola-infected rhesus macaque monkeys. Back to the argument, a spurious one apparently, that was floated by DAZAC and EcoHealth Alliance that the bushmeat could be used to bring Ebola into the U.S. The article, which quoted an EcoHealth Alliance spokesperson, spread a false, not to mention racist and xenophobic narrative, one that subsequently would be thoroughly debunked, that bushmeat smuggled to the U.S. from Africa could transmit Ebola to Americans. In January of 2015, a meeting of the U.K. Bushmeat Working Group convened. The group countered Bazak's misinformation with the facts in an article titled Ebola and Bushmeat, Myth and Reality. The article stated, quote, as the Ebola virus can remain viable in untreated carcasses for up to 3 to 4 days, there is a risk of transporting it to bushmeat markets, though there is no evidence of this to date. However, the risk of transmitting Ebola in bushmeat overseas to Europe or the USA is extremely low, given the total travel time and the fact that these carcasses are usually smoked, which probably inactivates the virus. The risk of spread to new areas, lies with the movement of infected people, not infected meat. And I would note the xenophobic and alarmist, and I would say racist overtones to this analysis, and I think something of the same degree of xenophobia and racism is also being applied to the Oswald Institute of Virology, or the Wuhan Institute of Oswald, as I have called it, because I think they were set up to take the fall by a covert operation. The notion that Chinese eat bats, you know, they're barbarians, you know, that the yellow peril is something that I personally have experienced quite directly. I heard a lot of people, initially in the immediate aftermath, I should say, of the lockdown, talking about Chinese, man, you know, they eat bats, you know, this, that, and the other thing. This, I think, is worth taking stock of. As Alexis Baden-Mayer points out, the SARS pandemic is another area in which Bazak basically laid an egg from a theoretical standpoint. The SARS pandemic is another instance where Bazak's theories didn't pan out. It is commonly accepted that the SARS pandemic began in 2002 when humans caught a bat virus from civet cats at a wet market in Guangdong, China. But Bazak and his collaborators admit that they have no evidence to explain how the virus leapt from bats to civets to humans. SARS-CoV was found in civets at the Guangdong wet market, but civets aren't the natural reservoir of this virus. Bats are. Only the civets at the market, note this, only the civets at the market and no farm-raised or wild civets carried the virus. None of the animal traders handling the civets at the market had SARS. Again, none of the animal traders handling the civets at the market had SARS. Why not? When Bezac and his collaborators at the WIV searched the cave in Yunnan province for strains of coronavirus similar to human versions, no single bat actually had SARS. Genetic pieces of the various strains would have to be recombined to make up the human version. That makes one wonder what happened again. When Bezac and his collaborators at the WIV searched the cave in Yunnan for strains of coronavirus similar to human versions, no single bat actually had SARS. Genetic pieces of the various strains would have to be recombined to make up the human version. Adding to the confusion, Yunnan is about 1,000 kilometers from Guangdong. So how did viruses from bats in Yunnan combine to become deadly to humans and then travel to civets and people in Guangdong without causing any illnesses along the way during the 1,000-kilometer trip? Yes, indeed. And how come none of the animal traders at that wet market got SARS? One of the projects that we have been focusing on in many programs is the USAID and NIH-funded project involving EcoHealth Alliance and the Wuhan Institute of Virology, again, the Oswald Institute of Virology from a conceptual standpoint, or the Wuhan Institute of Oswald, because I think it was set up as a fall laboratory, to coin the term. Ralph Barrich had genetically mutated a virus very similar to SARS-CoV-2, and then Ralph Barrich was selected to reconstruct the SARS-CoV-2 using state-of-the-art technology that we have spoken about in past programs. One of the very interesting things about gain-of-function research and this project, this paper by both Dr. Jingli Shi and Ralph Barrich, concerns the failure to enter the genetic material into an appropriate database. Returning once again to Alexis Bodenmayer's article. It is the $44.2 million predict grant, again funded by USAID in part, that EcoHealth Alliance used to fund the gain-of-function experiment by WIV scientist Zhengli Shi and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill's Ralph Barrich. Shi and Barrich used genetic engineering and synthetic biology to create a, quote, new bat SARS-like virus that can jump directly from its bat hosts to humans, unquote. Bezac described the work being done by Shi and Barrich in a 2019 interview. You can manipulate them, coronaviruses, in the lab pretty easily. Spike protein drives a lot of what happens with the coronavirus zoonotic risk. So you can get the sequence, you can build the protein, and we worked with Ralph Barrich at UNC to do this. Insert it into a backbone of another virus and do some work in the lab, unquote. The work, quote, a SARS-like cluster of circulating bat coronaviruses shows potential for human emergence, unquote, published in Nature magazine in 2015 during the National Institute of Health's moratorium on gain-of-function research, was grandfathered in because it was initiated before the moratorium. Again, reviewing, we've spoken about this in many programs. In 2014, there was a moratorium on gain-of-function research because many critics felt it was just too damn risky. That was when Barack Obama was president. It was then restarted in 2017, and of course, Donald Trump was president then. Once again, resuming this. The work, A SARS-like cluster of circulating bat coronaviruses shows potential for human emergence, unquote, published in Nature magazine in 2015 during the NIH's moratorium on gain-of-function research, was grandfathered in because it was initiated before the moratorium, quote, officially called the U.S. government deliberative process research funding pause on selected gain-of-function research involving influenza, MERS, and SARS viruses, and because the request by Xi and Barrett to continue their research during the moratorium was approved by the NIH. NIH, by the way, is much larger than CIA and Pentagon, but it has fronted for both of them. Now, this is what is so interesting at one level and damn suspicious at another. As a condition of publication, Nature magazine, like most scientific journals, requires authors to submit new DNA and RNA sequences to GenBank, that's capital G-E-N, capital B-A-N-K, one word, the U.S. National Center for Biotechnology Information Database. Yet the new SARS-like virus Xi and Barrett created was not deposited in GenBank until May of 2020. Why the 5-year wait? Things don't happen for no reason. And I think it is beyond credibility to think of, whoop, you know, we just forgot, you know, that the whoopsie daisy theory of history. Why the 5-year wait? It was published in 2015 and not entered into the GenBank until May of 2020 when we were well into the pandemic. Another very interesting thing. BASAC's collaborators working under contracts with the Department of Health and Human Services aren't allowed to conduct gain-of-function research unless specifically approved to do so by the Potential Pandemic Pathogen Care and Oversight, or P3CO, committee. This committee was set up as a condition for lifting the 2014 to 2017 moratorium on gain-of-function research. The P3CO committee operates in secret. Not even a membership list has been released. The only information provided to the public is that Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response Robert Kadlec, capital K-A-D-L-E-C, appointed Health and Human Services Senior Science Advisor Christian Hassel, H-A-S-S-E-L-L, as its chair. It is time to open the records of the PC3O committee's deliberations and decisions to examine all gain-of-function research on coronaviruses. And every lab manipulating these viruses should have their coronaviruses compared to SARS-CoV-2. And we have spoken both in discussion of the Whitney Webb article and in connection with this article about the Pentagon's Defense Threat Reduction Agency, and noting here from the article by Alexis Bodden-Mayer, DTRA's mission was to dismantle the biological weapons programs of hostile or destabilized countries. Instead, it is being used to develop new biological weapons programs in dozens of countries around the world. Again, worth noting. Also worth noting is that the EcoHealth Alliance has Pentagon contracts with Tanzania, with South Africa, with Malaysia, with Georgia. Again, that is the former Republic of the Soviet Union, not what Ray Charles was singing about, as well as many contracts here in the U.S., or with contracts, I shouldn't say many, here in the U.S. One of the most suspicious of these things, well, really, I wouldn't say one of them, but exemplifying that, is one of the things that they're working on in Tanzania. EcoHealth Alliance has a $5.5 million contract, Crimean Congo Hemorrhagic Fever, reducing an emerging health threat in Tanzania. Crimean Congo Hemorrhagic Fever, or CCHF, is a tick-borne disease originally only infecting animals that was discovered by Otis and Callister Causey while working for the Rockefeller Foundation in Nigeria. There was only one case ever of CCHF in Tanzania, and that was in 1986. Gain-of-function research on CCHF is being conducted at the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Bio and Agro-Defense Facility to determine, quote, the mechanisms of CCHF transmission, including development of CCHF tick and animal infection methods and CCHF tick animal transmission methods. This sounds very much like the research that we looked at in For the Record programs 1135, 1136, and 1137 using Chris Newby's marvelous work on Lyme disease as a biological warfare weapon. I will also note that Tanzania, and we won't linger on this, but it is the site of the chikungunya virus, which is being genetically mutated and is being investigated as a biological warfare program. That is more than interesting. In South Africa, EcoHealth Alliance has a Pentagon contract, and some of the things they are looking at overlap things that were used by Project COAST, the notorious South African biological warfare research program that was engaged in by the apartheid government there. And Dr. Larry Ford was working with Project COAST, courtesy of the CIA. And Larry Ford had as one of his central political reference points, the Turner Diaries. One of the people with whom Larry Ford worked remarked to an FBI informant, and this was during the apartheid regime, that they may have to attack the U.S., and he asked this FBI informant, how fast could you get your daughter and family out of the U.S. if you had to? A lot of people say, well, they wouldn't do that. Oh, yeah. What do you think people like that wouldn't do? What do you think people like Larry Ford wouldn't do? Stephen Hatfield was an initial subject. I suspect he may very well have had a lot to do with the anthrax attacks in 2001. That is obviously speculative, but certainly the anthrax attacks led to a huge expansion in U.S. biological warfare research. He was an initial suspect, but was ultimately exonerated, whatever his role may or may not have been. Stephen Hatfield was a member of White Afrikaner Resistance. He also had links to the apartheid regime in South Africa. And again, what is it that people like that wouldn't do? There are numerous Pentagon contracts that are held by the EcoHealth Alliance. They have been doing a lot of work in not only Zaire, but Liberia and other places, Georgia, as I mentioned, and the U.S., Malaysia. They have a Pentagon contract. And again, I have spoken about this in past programs. They also have Pentagon contracts in the U.S., other Pentagon contracts as described in this article. EcoHealth Alliance had a $1 million Pentagon contract running from 2017 to 2019 for an inbound bioevent information system, or IBIS, a web-based application and early warning system for global infectious disease bioevents that threaten the U.S. via international transportation networks, unquote. Well, I wonder if that is something like that bushmeat false flag, basically, that was floated in our earlier discussion about bushmeat could be the backdoor for Ebola to enter the U.S. More. EcoHealth Alliance also had another $4.5 million Pentagon contract for 2015 to 2017. No other information is available on this contract other than it is for, quote, applied research, exploratory development, unquote, in the physical, engineering, and life sciences, except biotechnology. And again, the Pentagon is not in the business of protecting the public health. They are in the business of war fighting. Now, Pruning again, we talked about him last week. Pruning to the aforementioned Dr. Jeffrey Sachs. He was the head of the Harvard Institute for International Development, partly funded by the U.S. government, and they were the key advisors to Boris Yeltsin in Russia and helped to drive Russia back to the Stone Age from an economic standpoint. In an article by Doug Henwood of the Left Business Observer called The Long, Strange Career of Jeffrey Sachs from August of 2005, there is a good discussion of Jeffrey Sachs, and he, and that is to say, Doug Henwood, who, by the way, has a program on Pacifica Radio here in the Bay Area. Sachs admits no responsibility for the Russian catastrophe. When I interviewed him in November of 2002, I asked him to comment on the incontrovertible fact that he is viewed by scores of millions of Russians, as one journalist put it, as either an emissary of Satan or the CIA. He somewhat praises, that is to say, Sachs, somewhat praises of transparency and honesty in government, unquote, even though the Yeltsin regime he was advising was opaque and corrupt. And again, Jeffrey Sachs has no scientific or medical credentials whatsoever. He is an economist. And so what is he is now heading an interdisciplinary project at Columbia University. And again, he is an advisor to both Bernie Sanders and AOC and is a member of the Sanders Institute. Worth noting here is that Jeffrey Sachs followed into Boris Yeltsin's Russia on the tales of the Free Congress Foundation and the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. I'm going to reread some excerpts from an article that we looked at in not only For the Record program number 778, but in AFA program 36 and in AFA program 37. It is from Covert Action Information Bulletin number 35 from the fall of 1990. The Free Congress Foundation Goes East by Russ Ballant and Lewis Wolf. And skipping down into the article, the this again was from the fall of 1990, so that the Soviet Union was still in effect, was still in existence at this point, not for very much longer. We should note here that the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, which is front and center in this organization, the Free Congress Foundation and its affiliates. The anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations sought the breakup of the former Soviet Union into its constituent republics. There were other organizations that were associated with the Galen Organization and the CIA, such as the NTS or the Solidarists, that sought to keep the Russian Empire together, but under Western or right-wing auspices. It was ultimately the ABM agenda that was realized. Skipping down in this article again, the Free Congress Foundation Goes East by Russ Ballant and Lewis Wolf from Covert Action Information Bulletin number 35 from the fall of 1990. The involvement of the U.S. far-right brings with it the potential revival of fascist organizations in the East. One U.S. group, the Free Congress Foundation, has been playing a role in Eastern Europe and Soviet politics and has ties to Boris Yeltsin and the Interregional Deputies Group, or IRG, in the USSR. The Free Congress Foundation was founded in 1974 by Paul Weyrich as the Committee for the Survival of a Free Congress. Weyrich, who had started the Heritage Foundation the year before, was heavily funded by the Kurz family for both organizations. and it talks about some of the various organizations with which Weyrich was affiliated, the American Independent Party founded by George Wallace, and elements of the Ku Klux Klan, the John Birch Society, and others. Skipping down. The Interregional Deputies Group, or IRG, was established by Andrei Sakharov, Boris Yeltsin, and others in the summer of 1989. By the end of that year, a training school had been established for candidates to put forward the IRG program. Their electoral success this year propelled Yeltsin to the leadership of the Russian Soviet Socialist Republic. He immediately began forging collaborative relationships with the deeply reactionary leaders of the Lithuanian Sąjūdis Party. The IRG has also served as a source of right-wing pressure on Gorbachev to dismantle socialism and the Soviet Union itself. Of course, that is exactly what happened. Talking about Ukraine. In the latter republic, the pro-Nazi Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, or OUN, has gained influence in several parties and has mobilized large demonstrations that honor OUN leaders who abetted Hitler's war on the Eastern Front. Similarly, several Sąjūdis deputies served in German military units in 1944, and Sąjūdis has made declarations against ethnic Russians living in Lithuania. According to some reports, Poles have also been denigrated. It should also be noted that the radical reformer, unquote, Boris Yeltsin, has dallied with Pomyat, the foremost Russian fascist group to emerge in the last several years. Pomyat's virulent anti-Semitism compares to the crude propaganda of the early German Nazi Party in the 1920s. The Free Congress Foundation is not entirely disconnected from the history of the OUN. The treasurer of the FCF board is Georgetown University professor Charles Moser, M-O-S-E-R. Moser also serves on the editorial advisory board of the Ukrainian Quarterly, published by the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, a group dominated by the OUN. The Ukrainian Quarterly has praised military units of the German SS and otherwise justified the OUN alliance with the Third Reich, which reflects the fact that the OUN was politically and militarily allied with Hitler and the Nazi occupation of the Ukraine. The OUN, an international semi-secret cadre organization headquartered in Bavaria, has received financial assistance from the late Franz Josef Strauss, the richest head of the Bavarian state. Strauss also had a working relationship with Weyrich of the FCF. Skipping down. Finally, FCF's insinuation into the politics of the East must be judged by their selection of Laszlo Pastor to head their Liberation Support Alliance, quote, which seeks to liberate peoples in Central and Eastern European nations. Pastor's involvement in East European politics began in World War II when he joined the youth organization of the Arrow Cross, the Nazi Party of Hungary. When the Arrow Cross was installed in power by a German commando operation, Pastor was sent to Berlin to help facilitate the liaison between the Arrow Cross and Adolf Hitler. He eventually came to the U.S. and established the ethnic arm of the Republican National Committee for Richard Nixon. He brought other Nazi collaborators from the Eastern Front into the GOP. Some were later found to have participated in mass murder during the war. And skipping down, Pastor claims to have assisted some of his friends in Hungary in getting NED funds through his advisory position with the National Endowment of Democracy, parenthetically founded by William Casey. Continuing, in 1989, he spoke at the Heritage Foundation under the sponsorship of the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, or ABN, a multinational umbrella organization of emigre fascists and Nazis founded in alliance with Hitler in 1943. It is led by the OUN. pastor spoke for the Hungarian organization of ABN, which is the Arrow Cross. Again, these are the people who were projected into the former Soviet Union and allied with Boris Yeltsin. And then after the Soviet Union was broken up, in come Jeffrey Sachs and the Harvard Institute for International Development, funded in part by the U.S. government, and they advised Boris Yeltsin, and the result was an absolute disaster for Russia. In For the Record program, the series that we did called For the Record program 1146 through 1150, the space plane and COVID-19, the paperclip legacy, we took a look in particular in For the Record programs 1149 and 1150 at William Casey and his role in not only helping to set up the CIA as a repository for many of the SS cadres associated with the Galen spy organization, but it was William Casey who was appointed by Alan Dulles to oversee, and William Donovan, to oversee, to basically supervise OSS operations in Germany in late 1944 and 1945. Later it was William Casey, who was one of the people centrally involved in bringing the same ABN, OUN associated Nazi and fascist elements into the U.S., where they helped to coalesce as the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, basically the Nazi branch of the Republican Party. We took a look in that same series at how the Galen organization, even when it was BND, continued to finance many of those same elements in the U.S. Basically, we looked at the continuity of that organization from the Third Reich through the transition to the Galen organization and the transition of the Galen org to the CIA, then to the BND, and the co-evolution of that with the Republican Party's Ethnic Outreach Organization and William Casey. William Casey also set up Capital Cities Incorporated, which was heavily overlapped with the Mary Carter Paint Company, also known as Investors. Actually, I haven't got the title right here. The Mary Carter Paint Company was also known as Resorts International. Bit of a mnemonic burp there, so forgive me. And Resorts International, as we looked at, was heavily overlapped not only with the aforementioned Cap Cities Incorporated, but with the Paradise Island Bridge Company, which in turn appears to have been an underground Reich Galen / Bormann front organization to a considerable extent. Anyway, certainly the board of directors suggests that. And bear in mind that it was the aforementioned Resorts International, formerly the Mary Carter Paint Company, that paid a fortune in legal fees to Alan Dulles' law partner, who then in turn advised John J. McCoy and the U.S. High Commissioner, John J. McCoy, who is U.S. High Commissioner for Germany, on the commutation of sentences for various key German luminaries who had been sentenced for war crimes. The point being that the continuity that we looked at in For the Record programs 1149 and 1150, really For the Record programs 1146 through 1150, from the Third Reich to the OSS to the CIA to the Galen organization, overlapping Cap Cities, overlapping the Resorts International and the Mary Carter Paint Company, and very possibly the Paradise Island Bridge Company, and the Republican Party, last but most assuredly not least, That continuity led directly to the Free Congress Foundation and Laszlo Pastor, the head of the Republican, the Nazi branch of the Republican Party, being projected into the former Soviet Union. The former Soviet Union then breaks apart, as per the agenda of the ABN. In comes Jeffrey Sachs and the HIIB. They advise Boris Yeltsin, who again was dallying with Pomyat, and part of whose CV we reviewed in that article. And by the way, that will be in the printed description for the record program number 1159. Really for 57, 58, and 59. And now we've got Jeffrey Sachs, with no medical or scientific credentials, being appointed to help with the Lancet's evaluation of the origins of SARS-CoV-2 and COVID-19. Sachs is charged officially anyway with overseeing the larger, or helping to distill the larger economic and sociological effects of SARS-CoV-2. But one would think that The Lancet, again, a British, prestigious British medical publication, would be able to have someone who has some medical or scientific credentials, and Jeffrey Sachs has none of those. Jeffrey Sachs, again, played a key role, according to Doug Henwood, and others, by the way, agree with that assessment, in basically destroying the Russian economy. And he is now an advisor to Bernie Sanders, an advisor to AOC, and now he is going to be working with Peter Bazak of the EcoHealth Alliance to give us the word, so to speak, on the origins of SARS-CoV-2. Again, the Russians, many people in Russia, millions of Russians, view him as an emissary of either Satan or the CIA. I don't believe in the existence of Satan. And we will take a look at something that just scares the fresh fertilizer out of me, and that is how this concatenation figures into the gene drive technology that we have discussed in connection with the Whitney Webb article and some of the DARPA research that we have looked at in connection with that. That will be in our next program. I cannot stress strongly enough for listeners to secure the 32 gigabyte flash drive with all of my life's work on it, plus a mini library of old anti-fascist books. The latest iteration of that flash drive is being put together right now. It will be available shortly. There is a link at the top of each For the Record description that you can click on in order to order that flash drive from sister station KFJC-FM. None of us knows exactly what is coming, but I am very scared and very pessimistic. That is why I am focusing on the COVID-19 phenomenon. I think we are at the apotheosis of our civilization. I hear people saying about the pandemic, we're going to get through this. No, I don't think we are. I don't think we are supposed to. And I will ruminate more about that in the future. We're also going to be talking about what the hell I really mean by biopsyop apocalypse, the psychological effects of the pandemic, and we are going to be moving along to the economic effects of the pandemic, the wealth concentration effects of this virus, which are enormous and at the very epicenter, I believe, of the purpose of the COVID-19 op. And again, please, if you value this program, if you value the work that I'm doing, I am now in my 42nd year on the air. I do not profit in any way from this work. I only ask that listeners to the program get the 32 gigabyte flash drive with all of my life's work on that. It is fundamental. And you will be able to preserve the legacy and explain to your descendants what happened. However, that is all we have time for in this program. This concludes For the Record program number 1159, BioPsyOp Apocalypse Now Part 19, An Ounce of Prevention Part 4, being recorded on October 29th of 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.